Hello, and welcome to And All Shall Be Well. Today, my guest is Rabbi Jillian, who is in the Southern California area and is helping to lift up people of faith, particularly those who are LGBTQ, and is doing it with joy in her heart. Our conversation centers around ways that we can care for others and make it through days like today. And I hope that it inspires you to live well and to learn more about your neighbors.
Hi, everyone. I'm Rabbi Jillian Cameron, and I live in Los Angeles. I work at a synagogue called Beth Chaim Chadashim, which is the world's first LGBT synagogue in the whole world. And I use she, her pronouns.
And how do you identify in terms of different intersections?
All sorts of ways. Intersectionality is so fascinating. I'm an introvert. There's one. I am queer myself. I don't love the term lesbian. I use gay a lot, but then people get confused. I am progressive. I am complex in a lot of different ways. I have lots of different pieces of things swirling around. I don't know. I try not to identify with too many labels, actually. So maybe that's how I identify.
I like that. It's not the first time that people have left themselves a mystery for later in the conversation. So,
well, I think we pin ourselves into corners with how we must collect other people by the labels that we give ourselves. And I like to have a little more fluidity.
Well, for folk who maybe have never been to a gay synagogue, what is that like? And there also might be some listeners who have never been to a synagogue. So explain at any level that you would like.
Happily. So I would say a gay synagogue is fairly similar to a regular synagogue. A synagogue is a worship space for people in the Jewish community. And there are all different kinds of them. Mostly they are divided by denomination, just like you might have in a Christian world as well. Different types of people come together based on shared values, overarchingly Jewish, but maybe have different understandings of interpretation. So the synagogue I work at is a Reform synagogue, which is on the more liberal end of things in all sorts of ways in interpretation, as well as sometimes when we dabble in so the political world, also more liberal. And the overlay of the LGBT piece of who we are is that the majority of our population considers themselves part of the queer community. And we were founded 52 years ago because it was really hard to be both queer and Jewish at the same time in that decade. It's certainly not the most easy thing all the time now, even, but much easier because of places like ours and others that have followed. And really, the goal was to be able to be both practicing comfortable in a Jewish space as well as practicing comfortable in a queer space, not having to hide one of those things to be a member of the community that you choose to be a part of. And so it really looks very similar to the normative synagogue that you might be a part of. We have celebrate holidays. We celebrate Shabbat on a Friday night, sometimes Saturday. We have life cycle events. It's a community. And that's essentially what religious spaces all aim to be, I think. And we have that lovely overlay of celebrating diversity as well. And that has turned into more than just queer diversity, but we have all sorts of other diversity that we celebrate, Jews of color, Jews by choice, interfaith families, things like that. So it's really the center of our values are around diversity, which isn't always what you might see in varying religious spaces.
And good food, right?
I mean, we try. We have a lot of that can be rough.
Wheat fans?
Vegans.
Oh, vegans. All right. I mean, LA, right?
How do you think your being Jewish and being a queer person shapes your perspective on faith?
Well, I think the underlying values that I have around faith and aspiring towards thinking about things that are bigger than me and my own particular needs and trying to have a sense of connection with things that are greater than me as well as the people in the world. I think that definitely comes from my sense of Judaism, my sense of community at the center, the different ways that we think about morality and values and ethics. And then I think the overlay of the sort of queer part of me also champions the sense of celebrating all those around me who are multifaceted and interesting and different and bring different things to the table. So I think those sort of layers, they work together very nicely, which is helpful. But they also push me to think about, think beyond myself and think about the different kinds of ways that people experience the world. And I think that leads me to a sense of faith that there's so much that different people offer, and that bringing people in who have different experiences, different backgrounds, different understanding, that helps me to have a sense of faith in the world about what could happen, what could be with all of this incredible diversity. You know, I might not be able to solve a problem, but someone else might be able to. And, you know, that just helps me to stay grounded in a sense of that there's something bigger out there that I can connect with that leads me to embrace the variety that exists in the world and how that is a such a positive joy necessity and built in. You know, it's built into who we are as humans. There's a reason that we're not all the same. And so embracing that is such a how I connect so much with my sense of faith and how I think things can get better.
I really resonate with that idea that diversity is a part of kind of this beautiful sacredness. And yet we still have a lot of people who grumpily lie to people and tell them that faith texts, whether they're Bible readers or Torah readers, there are people who erroneously tell people that sacred stories are against queer people. I'm curious if there are any stories from the Torah that are kind of pop out as your favorites, particularly from a queer perspective.
I think there's been a lot of what we say, like the queering of the Torah. We have a Torah commentary that's called Torah Queries, that obviously to, you know, little pun there. And so there's been a movement over the last few decades in sort of the liberal Jewish world that I'm a part of to seek out those stories, similar to the way that the women's movement really tried to pull out and seek out female Jewish role models in our texts, which are often obviously much harder to find. And championed those stories and created even more context and interest around them. So I think there's a certain amount of that has been going on, people trying to pull at those threads. You know, there's some obvious ones that I think people have resonated with. I think Ruth and Naomi is always a really interesting connection and conversation around, you know, what does it mean to have that kind of bond? You know, people have added their own overlay to those kinds of things. But there's something really special about those relationships, whether they are or have ever been, or you would like to believe them to be sort of sexualized or more than you might see in the text. I think there's lots of interesting archetypes for relationships that can cross boundaries in terms of gender and all of those things. So I also really appreciated like the Jonathan and David storyline. There's definitely like a whole like slew of fanfic, like Jewish fanfic around that. We call that Midrash, it's essentially the same thing. And you know, like the exploration of relationships that are not just the obvious ones. I mean, that's the thing. Those are the things that I appreciate, those little details that most people overlook because they're focused on the big flashy thing in front of them. And yet there are these little moments that you can read into in really beautiful ways and find examples of relationships that are not, you know, again, whether they're friend or romantic or any other types of relationships that are more intricate and more interesting and offer a little bit of a diverse path. You know, what does it mean to have those kinds of relationships? What does it mean to have different kinds of relationships with people, not just this normative, especially biblically normative, you know, you meet, you marry, you have kids. There are other relationships that exist in our text that I think offer, not explicitly perhaps, but implicitly, a variety of different ways of interacting with people. And I think that's where some of that magic happens for interpretation.
Well, and if I'm, you're obviously more learned than I am being a rabbi in the Torah. But correct me if I'm wrong. It feels like in Jewish rituals and the ways that the flow of the calendar of rituals is set up is not set up in sort of a Christian mindset of do this or you're going to get in trouble. But it's more of a like, care for the world, care for your family, care for do good things for other people. And because you're a human and you're going to screw it up, let's have rituals for when you do that too. But let's like do it in one big heap rather than so we have more time to care for the world. Right? Is that sort of a lay version or a eavesdropper's version of what's going on through the calendar?
No, I like that a lot. I often say that when people ask me, like, what are the big differences between like religious traditions? There's like a really big obvious one, but then the more subtle ones are this and what you bring up and the idea of Judaism's focus has never really been on afterlife or like what happens next. It's very much focused on life and now. You know, there's a quote from Deuteronomy, choose life. It's very, people like to use this one for all sorts of things, good and bad. But I think it centers our philosophy on like this, the world that we live in now is the one we are trying to have an effect on. There's, you know, just a slight twist of a different version of that theology of like, do good things, be a good person in the world, you know, make the world a better place. So that you can live in that world, not necessarily so that, you know, the after you die, there will be a place for you somewhere. Judaism doesn't really focus that much on the after you die part and really only focused on it, I think, more in comparison to an emerging Christianity. And, you know, that when other folks that were focusing more on that and we were like, hey, maybe we should think about this, too. But there is a centeredness on living in the world now and not just perfecting it or making it better for some reward. But the reward is in the perfecting, and the reward is in the work of living in that space of making it better and like seeing a better world for ourselves and our children. And we have this concept called Tikkun Olam, which is literally the Hebrew repairing the world. And it comes from this like incredible story around God putting sort of all of this really intense godly energy into this vessel. And this vessel can't contain all of this incredible divine inspiration and energy and light. And so it rips apart and shards of this vessel go flying everywhere and are implanted in each every single soul that will ever exist in the world. And how we put this vessel back together is by joining together, that each of us have a little piece of it in ourselves, and by creating community, doing good things together, continuing to do this work, that's how we repair the world around us, and put that vessel back together. This is a story that I think about all the time in terms of like our responsibility in the world and how we go about things, that it's, you know, about making those connections, about being in community, not just trying to go it alone, and finding, and also ultimately being reminded that all of us share certain things as much as we love and champion diversity, which is a huge part of the world and each of us being unique. There are so many things that we share. And so finding those sparks in other people is really part of repairing the world, and part of our responsibility, and hopefully something that we integrate into all of the different rituals and customs and moments where we repent for not quite making the mark, as well. You know, that it's all in service of trying to live in a space that reflects where we want it to be.
Well, then you're the perfect person then to answer this question about wellness, right? Because if that's the goal, is to have the world put back together and justice pursue while we're kind of living out our full diversity.
That sounds great. Let's go there.
Let's do that. And like, how do you live that out? What's working for you these days?
It's difficult. You know, I don't want to be dishonest and say that I have it all figured out, because it's really hard to live in the world that we live in and do this work and try to make things better, and try to help other people, and all of those things. It's hard to find that balance. And I'm certainly not an expert at that, but I do try, because I do think it's really important. And I think, like I said, I'm an introvert. So for me, you know, those big, huge moments of tons of things happening in people and is not something that helps me. But in the same realm of what I was just speaking about, making those personal connections, you know, finding that spark in other people and, you know, creating sort of a joint energy. You know, when you meet those people in the world, you know, wherever you meet them, that there's like some connection, something that you just get about each other that's really special. No matter, you know, if that's a long-term relationship or something that will just exist for a little bit of time, you know, that really offers me a sense of calm and of peace, of, you know, being able to connect to someone else who understands you, who I understand. You know, there's that mutuality. I think so often in when we are like ministering to other people, when we are, you know, doing the work of community building and religious worship and all of these different pieces that encompass being a clergy person in the world these days, we don't take the time to take care of ourselves, because we take care of other people so very much, and in some ways gain a lot from that. You know, that's something that I chose and I love that I do, and yet you know, those moments where it feels more mutual and less one-sided, even though that's perfectly, you know, normal part of existence and my existence as well. So that's something. And then because I'm an introvert, I like being alone and doing things that are, you know, leaving the normal space that I'm in, you know, even if it's something silly and like walking down the street to a park that's accessible or things like that. But nature is a real big one for me, I would say. Like listening to the ocean, you know, being, I have family that live up in Northern California. And whenever I used to fly there, when I lived on the East Coast, I would have this ritual where I would have the 6-hour flight from the East Coast. I'd get off the plane and we would stop at Muir Woods on the way to where they lived. And this big, huge redwood park that just has different air. And we would just walk through it for half an hour and just all that draining travel energy would be replenished by being in this sort of beautiful, moist air of you know, trees and life, and also that feeling of feeling small. I talk about this a lot, and I think people often think that that's a bad thing, to feel small, and it can be. If someone else makes you feel small, that's not a good thing. Always, but to be able to see yourself not as the center of it at all. And we all live in that world where we are the main character, and that's okay. There's nothing wrong with that. That's life. But having those moments every once in a while, we put ourselves in those spaces where we realize that we are just a microcosm of something so much bigger. You know, whether it's something divine, whether it's just the world, however, whatever makes sense for us. Those are those moments for me. When I'm able to release some of the tension of life and just be grateful for what's around me and being in that moment in time.
And especially like the feeling of being small when it feels like the whole world's against you, because it's like a problem where it's not the whole world. Like, there are folk living off the grid who, even if you were Angelina Jolie having a bad day, they're not going to see the news about it. So like there are things that are earth changing in our personal lives, like particularly changes to our family systems or being injured or experiencing trauma in ways that just change everything. Yeah. Where our whole world has changed. But I like this idea that like you can have a big screw up, but it's not a forever screw up. And it's, I'm not trying to tell people that there's nothing they can't like, that their problems aren't big or important, because they're definitely big and important,
sure.
But something about those big trees up in Muir Woods make me feel like those trees don't care and the birds in the trees don't care. And at least for a moment, the world is big enough to hold even the biggest problem. And I like that idea that I can stay in a world even if I'm doing something unimaginably difficult.
Yeah.
Or if I can't hold it, to have a place I can kind of give it away.
Yeah, let it go. Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think, again, we all live our lives with us at the center, as, you know, as there's not really anywhere way else to live, I think, for the majority of time. But how do we have those moments of perspective, you know, of, and that's what really feeds me so often, is, you know, taking that time to like step away, not just like in swirling around in the chaos of daily life, but, you know, purposefully like moving to a different space. And it can be really simple. Like I said, like the park down the street that you never go to because you're too busy, like, you know, and it can be something like going on a vacation to the other side of the world where everything looks different. And therefore you're forced into perspective because there's nothing to hold you to regular life. But I think making that time for me is really necessary, or else you sort of spin out of control. And it's hard to remind yourself of priorities, of like, what are my values in this? You know, am I heading down a path that I don't want to head down? Am I getting caught up in something that I don't need to get caught up in? And, you know, like you said, those, the things that we mess up or that are happening to us that are out of our control, or, you know, any number of difficulties, it doesn't mean it goes away, but it means that maybe we find a different space of strength to move forward with whatever's.
Well, and hopefully knowing that there are a lot of people trying to do the whole thing helps as well, right? Like people in different parts of the globe with similar hearts kind of attuned towards seeing which part of the justice making they can do. Because I know that if I wanted to, I could protest something every day of the week in San Francisco. And there was a time when I thought I felt really guilty because I couldn't go to every single one of them, because then I would have to do other stuff too. And particularly as a parent, not being able to do as many of those things. And I think what has always really been really helpful for me is this idea that like, there are things that are mine to do and I can focus on them because other people are doing the things that are theirs.
Yes.
And some days people don't show up and they don't do theirs. But, you know, maybe if I'm doing my wellness regularly and refreshing myself, that then there will be opportunities for me to find extra energy for the days other people don't show up. Right. So I sort of have to grasp that rhythm of the universe in how I'm moving forward. And so I appreciate that you're holding yours out in LA for us.
I think something else that I was thinking of as you were talking too is the power of saying no. I'm really bad at this, so I'm not an expert. But it's something that I've been thinking about more and more recently as a form of wellness, as a form of, and, you know, knowing your sense of priorities, like wanting to be at every protest, wanting to, you know, wanting to continue to fight for the people who need fighting for, you know, who wanting to be that voice of justice constantly, and feeling that sense of guilt of like, well, what happens when I have other things that I have to do, you know, and who's going to do it? And in some ways, you know, we become the center of that in a way that might not be healthy for anyone. But in other ways, I think it's also about priorities, right? That we have to decide for ourselves. That's a wellness piece and a healthy, you know, thing to think about, like what are our priorities? And if you're a parent, then I would hope that your priorities, one of them is on parenting and being there for your family and your children and, you know, partner, you know, other folks who are helping parents, you know, your larger family. As well as any number of other things that are also priority, you know, that and so, you know, those simple things of and taking that time to decide and be conscious about it, not just letting things happen to you. I feel like I get into that a lot where it's just letting things happen and not feeling any agency in the choices that we make. And, you know, sometimes a well-placed no or, you know, is an incredible gift to your own health and well-being.
Well, and with that in mind, sometimes I ask people how they would like to be contacted. And you've already described yourself as an introvert, but in your personal life, is roaming off by yourself. So instead, I'm going to ask if people want to connect with your community where you're doing your public out there work, what's the best way to connect with your community?
Well, first, I would love for people to connect with me. I'm an extroverted rabbi. You know, my community is called Beth Chaim Chadashim, BCC, which makes it much easier. That's a lot of chuz for people. Our website is bcc-la.org. My email, I'm happy to hear from anyone, is jillian@bcc-la.org. And I love meeting people, talking to interesting folks, and really, you know, listening mostly. So I'm happy to be a resource, be a listener.
Thank you for listening. I'm so glad you made it through to the end. I hope that this conversation has inspired you to think a little bit more about ways that you can love this world and be in community with others who help to support you. If you have appreciated this podcast, I hope that you will like and subscribe. And if you really enjoy it, perhaps that you will support us on Patreon. In the days and weeks to come, I know that things might feel like they are difficult and hard, or like waiting through the angry opinions that people have is something that can decrease your love of the world. But all you got to do is make it through today and do the best you can. Know that I am rooting for you in every way that I can. And if you're needing a little extra support and TLC, check me out on any of my social media pages. And I will talk to you again.